The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's Vision News is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937. By providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from usatoday.com, will a Texas-led legal fight over gender dysphoria threaten disabled student protections? Villanova University student Kaylee Brendel has had low vision her entire young life. At her college in Pennsylvania and as a child growing up in New Jersey, she has used screen reading technology that turns written documents or books into audio recordings and hardcover braille texts. To compensate for the longer time it takes to listen to passages being read aloud or in braille, she's been given extended time on exams. These accommodations given to her through a federal disability protections law have allowed her to attend and thrive in traditional classes with students who don't have a disability, she said. Without a screen reader and braille, I would not be able to have an equitable education, Brendel said. Braille is the ultimate equalizer. It has allowed me to learn literacy and keep up with my peers. Now, upwards of 1 million students with disabilities like Brendel, who receive assistance in schools, could be affected by a legal challenge to that same law, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Known as 504 plans, the popular system for accommodating students in school are geared for kids who do qualify for help under disability plans known as IEPs, or Individualized Education Programs. The more than 50-year-old law requires federally funded schools to offer learning plans and accommodations to students with disabilities. The law also mandates protections from discrimination for Americans with disabilities in federally funded workplaces, hospitals, and other agencies. In September 2024, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, P-A-X-T-O-N, filed Texas versus Becerra, B-E-C-E-R-R-A, leading a coalition of 17 Republican state attorneys general against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services after the Biden administration's Office of Civil Rights finalized a new rule under Section 504 last year. That is a hot link in bold text. They've argued in their lawsuit that Section 504 is unconstitutional as it stands, and they want to see the law reevaluated in federal court and the repeal of key changes in the new regulations, which include protections for people who experience gender dysphoria and a clarified requirement for states to provide accommodations for people with disabilities in the most integrated setting. The most integrating settings in schools under Section 504 are often traditional classrooms with students who don't have disabilities. The alternative is an institutionalized or isolated setting, which could be a classroom or school away from their peers. In a recent joint status report, the Republican State Attorneys General, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and its Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. clarified they don't want to see the law entirely overturned or declared unconstitutional on its face, but they are concerned about the way the law is enforced. Despite the new development in the case, some disability experts say the lawsuit poses a serious threat to the federal disabilities law, and the outcome of the case could still lead to the law getting overturned. Shira Wachschlag, that's S-H-I-R-A-W-A-K-S-C-H-L-A-G, a senior director of legal advocacy and general counsel of a national nonprofit organization that serves people with intellectual and developmental disabilities called the ARC, A-R-C, says the lawsuit is still very much alive because it has not been amended or withdrawn. The original lawsuit stating Section 504 is unconstitutional is what's before the judge in the case, sparking worry, she said. Brendel worries most about the idea of students with disabilities being separated from their peers in traditional classrooms. The 17 states said they'd never wanted to make all of 504 unconstitutional, even though that was written in their complaint, Brendel said. They also said that the only aspects they want to repeal have to do with integration and protecting people from being placed in institutions. No disabled person should be forced to live in an institution. Iowa joins the suit. That's an aside that USA Today inserted there. What is Section 504? How could a child be affected? Section 504 is a federal law that protects people with disabilities from discrimination in federally funded institutions, including schools. About 1.6 million students with disabilities were served under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act during the 2021 school year, according to the most recent data from the U.S. Department of Education. Public schools and some private schools receive funding from the U.S. Department of Education to support students with disabilities. These students are guaranteed the right to a free, appropriate public education through the Individuals with Disabilities Act, and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act broadens those protections. The law guarantees a 504 plan for kids who need one at federally funded schools. The accommodation plans are for students with a wide range of disabilities who need specific tools and help to learn equally to their peers in integrated classrooms, said Daniel Vincent, Director of Disability Policy for the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement. Those tools can include noise-canceling headphones for students to stay focused, a desk at the height of a wheelchair, or a medical plan for a student who has an allergic reaction. One of the disabilities protected by Section 504 is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD. Kids with ADHD make up a large portion of those with 504 accommodation plans, which are needed to help them focus and complete schoolwork in an integrated classroom setting, said Jeffrey Katz, K-A-T-Z, a clinical psychologist and co-chair of the Public Policy Committee for the organization Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or CHADD. Most kids with ADHD need help with organization, management plans that help them with talking out or modifying their work because kids with ADHD have trouble persisting with effort, he said. All of these things can be done in a classroom. The legal requirement also forces teachers to follow student-specific plans to help them thrive in their classes and prevents students with disabilities from being segregated from their peers without disabilities, Katz said. What does the lawsuit say? The state attorneys general object to the addition of gender dysphoria to the list of student disabilities protected under Section 504. Gender dysphoria is the distress a person can feel when their gender identity doesn't match their sex assigned at birth. LGBTQ plus rights advocates have long said gender dysphoria is a recognized medical condition that should be considered a disability under Section 504. The states also oppose a part of the new rule that clarifies a long-standing stipulation of the rule that states must provide services for people with disabilities in the most integrated settings possible. In schools, that would mean kids with disabilities are required under the law to be served in traditional classrooms with students without disabilities. More broadly, they argue HHS under the Biden administration violated the Administrative Procedures Act and the Constitution's Spending Clause by placing new requirements on federal grants for people with disabilities, including students. The original lawsuit also states they want a judge to evaluate whether Section 504 as it stands and the regulation of the law is constitutional. Following the outcry from disability rights advocates and parents of students with disabilities, the Coalition of State Attorneys General have clarified in a court document they do not want to see the law removed in part or as a whole, but that the regulations of the law as it stands are too restrictive on states and unconstitutional as applied. On February 19th, the plaintiffs filed that joint status report in the U.S. District Court in Texas after President Donald Trump in January signed an executive order stating the agencies shall not, quote, promote or otherwise inculcate gender ideology, unquote, including gender dysphoria. They said in the court document that they are evaluating their position in the lawsuit based on this move. The state attorneys general suing include those from Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, South Dakota, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia. But the potential axing of protections for some people experiencing gender dysphoria under the law doesn't cover all of the state's worries. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach, K-O-B-A-C-H, has said he joined the lawsuit because of the added inclusion of gender dysphoria under Section 504. On the other hand, Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor has said he's concerned that the integrating setting requirement will increase costs in states with and burdens Medicaid providers. From Alaska's perspective, the gender dysphoria is a very small piece of this lawsuit, said Patty Sullivan, a spokesperson from the Alaska Department of Law, in an email to USA Today. Our concerns have been and continue to be on the adverse impacts this rule will have on the provision of services to people with severe disabilities and on state programs. U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas, Judge James Wesley Hendricks, is currently assigned to the case. Paxton's office and several of the other state attorneys general named in the complaint did not respond to inquiries about the lawsuit from USA Today. Sullivan, the spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Law, pointed to an op-ed written by Alaska State Attorney General Treg Taylor for the Alaska Beacon. There's a hot link to that letter. In the article, Taylor said that changes made to Section 504 have jeopardized the continued viability of state programs and services and are impossible for any state to fully comply with. In fact, the new regulation is likely to undermine the state's ability to provide ongoing service and supports, Taylor wrote. It requires states to redesign their service delivery systems to conform to newly imagined and vaguely defined requirements, regardless of the cost or impact to the state. Does Project 2025 eliminate IEPs? Not explicitly, but experts are wary. There's a hot link for that. Inside and beyond the classroom, this will touch millions of disabled children. Despite her vision impairment, Brendel has been able to succeed academically and socially in her schooling career, at least up until this point. But she worries she and other college students will not continue to prosper in schools, and whether it will be more difficult to secure jobs if Section 504 is removed from federal law. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, another disabilities protections law, mandates student learning adjustments on learning assessments and goals. But Section 504 goes further to specify that people with disabilities must be given the tools to thrive in integrated settings in federally funded schools, workplaces, and other agencies and organizations, said Carrie Gillespie, a senior policy analyst with the Education Policy Program at national nonpartisan think tank New America. Brandel said she's heard from many people abundantly qualified for their job but denied that job just on the basis of a disability. She fears that reality could worsen. This will touch millions of disabled children in some capacity, Brandel said. Contact Kayla Jimenez at KJIMENEZ at USATODAY.com. Follow her on X at Kayla Jimenez. From AFB.org, a moment captured in time. On December 5, 1934, the American Foundation for the Blind held a special ceremony at the site of what would become AFB's new headquarters at 15 East 16th Street in the Chelsea neighborhood of New York City. The event marked the laying of the cornerstone for AFB's new headquarters. In attendance were philanthropist and AFB founder M.C. Miguel, M-I-G-E-L, New York Times associate editor and AFB chairman Dr. John H. Finley, and the famous deafblind advocate Helen Keller, who had joined AFB a decade earlier in 1924. As part of the ceremony, a time capsule was placed into the building's cornerstone. In 1997, when AFB moved its headquarters 18 blocks north to 11 Penn Plaza, staff identified the time capsule's location thanks to photographs taken during the 1934 ceremony. The capsule, a large, welded-shut copper box, was placed in a secure new location. The time capsule was opened as part of AFB's centennial celebration in 2021. Inside, two silver disc records were discovered, protected by clay jackets, along with backup acrylic copies of the discs and instructions for playback etched into a mirror. The first record contained a recording of an NBC broadcast of the ceremony. NBC aired the event so that Helen Keller's lifelong friend and teacher, Ann Sullivan Macy, could listen to the special occasion from her hospital room, where she was recovering after losing her vision. Helen's speech during the ceremony was a particularly moving message to her best friend. On the second side of the record was a special report on AFB's accomplishments during its first decade, prepared for the time capsule by AFB President M.C. Miguel, M-I-G-E-L. The second silver disc featured a unique series of soundscapes created by employees in AFB's Talking Buck studio, intended for future listeners who might uncover the recordings. Once the unearthed recordings were removed from the capsule, they were sent to the AFB and Helen Keller Archive, housed at the American Printing House for the Blind in Louisville, Kentucky. There, archivists painstakingly digitized the recordings, a process that took a considerable amount of time. But once completed, AFB and APH recognized that these historic recordings should be shared with the world. On March 17, 2025, a special event was held at the original ceremony site, now home to the Center for Jewish History in New York City. A special vinyl record was produced from the first silver disc's audio, which is now available to listen to online via the links below. AFB gratefully acknowledges the American Printing House for the Blind, APH, which partnered with AFB to make the 2025 event possible. APH is currently developing the DOT Experience, a museum highlighting significant milestones in blindness history. You can learn more about the DOT Experience at the hot link. AFB also thanks the Center for Jewish History, which not only welcomed us for this special event unveiling the time capsule recordings, but also continues Helen Keller's dream of creating a more just and inclusive world. Below, watch the event live stream or listen to audio from the Cornerstone Ceremony, featuring a rare speech from Helen Keller and a recording of AFB's 10-year report, documenting key milestones in the field of blindness from 1923 to 1933. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift today, not just to help us preserve Helen Keller's legacy, but to create a world of endless possibilities for people who are blind, deafblind, or have low vision. There is an event live stream with a video on YouTube. Recording side A, Cornerstone Ceremony, remarks from Dr. John H. Finley, M.C. Miguel, and Helen Keller. There's an audio track for that. And a recording side B, report of 10 years of work of the American Foundation for the Blind Incorporated by M.C. Miguel, and an audio track for side B. From ACB.org, the American Council of the Blind to provide advisory services to the National Football League regarding accessibility for fans who are blind or have low vision. Dateline, Alexandria, Virginia, March 25, 2025. The American Council of the Blind, ACB, and the National Football League, NFL, are pleased to announce that ACB will now provide advisory services to the NFL in support of its long-standing commitment to accessibility for people who are blind or have low vision. This collaboration underscores the NFL's ongoing efforts to provide all fans with a full and equal experience when enjoying the excitement of the game of football. As a leading national advocacy organization with more than 8,000 members and 65 affiliates, ACB has long championed equality and accessibility for people who are blind or have low vision. ACB has played a key role in expanding audio description services, improving digital accessibility, and influencing public policy to ensure that people who are blind or have low vision can fully participate in all aspects of life. In its advisory capacity, ACB will provide expert guidance and feedback to the NFL regarding special events and its ongoing efforts to continually enhance the accessibility of its digital platforms, including the league's website, mobile applications, and other digital assets. "We're excited to join forces with one of the most iconic sports organizations in the world," said ACB Executive Director Scott Thornhill. "We applaud the NFL's commitment to accessibility, and we look forward to working together to create a more inclusive fan experience. We are excited to work with an organization as highly esteemed and knowledgeable as ACB to support our long-standing efforts to provide all fans, including those with disabilities, with the best overall experience when engaging with the NFL," said NFL Senior Vice President of Social Responsibility Anna Isaacson. "This initiative marks another step forward in the NFL's commitment to ensuring that fans who are blind or have low vision can enjoy the game with the same level of access as everyone else." From FightingBlindness.org, Beacon Stories, The Power of 3D Printing for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Edis Adilovic, E-D-I-S-A-D-I-L-O-V-I-C, a 33-year-old IT consultant and assistive technology teacher, has never let his blindness define him. Born in Bosnia, Edis lost his sight at the age of 2 due to sarcoidosis, a rare autoimmune disease. His family moved to Denmark in 1993, initially believing his blindness was caused by cancer, where Edis finally received the correct diagnosis. Growing up, Edis proved he didn't need his sight to live a full life. Edis went on to pursue higher education, even spending a year studying in New York City. His love for the outdoors, especially swimming and skiing, has been a constant in his life. Since the age of 10, Edis has been skiing and now participates in Ski for Light events, which enhance the quality of life for visually or mobility-impaired adults through cross-country skiing. Edis credits his ability to navigate the world with embracing technology. Working for the Danish Blind Society, the largest nonprofit for blind and visually impaired people in Denmark, he empowers others through his role as an IT consultant and assistive technology teacher. There are definitely things that are difficult when you're blind or visually impaired, but when I think about all the different steps I take to accomplish tasks, I'm actually very empowered, said Zetas. It's my super skill, and I try to live my life knowing I can make it happen no matter what it takes. A new chapter began for Edis in September 2023 when he attended a workshop on creating three-dimensional, 3D models for printing. Although this workshop was aimed at helping those who are blind or visually impaired, he was the only blind participant, and he quickly became fascinated by the potential of 3D models to transform the lives of the blind and visually impaired community. This curiosity led him to research and connect with 3D printing experts, eventually receiving a grant to acquire a 3D printer. Edis then spent several months teaching himself to design and print 3D models using AI and computer-aided design, CAD, software. His previous programming experience helped, but his determination and self-learning through books and online communities were key. I use screen readers, audio cues, and custom workflows to interact with 3D design software, says Edis. Through trial and error, I've developed unique methods to bring my creations to life. In late 2024, Edis launched Accessible 3D, a platform aimed at inspiring others to create 3D designs, providing three STL files ready to print, but also creating custom 3D models. His goal is to help the blind and visually impaired experience the world in a tactile way that was previously unimaginable. Recently, I prototyped a tactile emergency map for my workplace, says Edis. But I'd love to create 3D models of mountain trails for skiing so you can have a mental map, or design tactile board games that those who are blind or visually impaired can actually play. There are so many applications for this, and they are all so accessible. So I want to help others and share my knowledge. Edis's work with Accessible 3D is a testament to the power of technology and innovation in overcoming any limitations. The beautiful thing about 3D printing is that it lets us create solutions for specific needs, he says. We're not stuck with mass-produced items that sort of work. We can design and print things that work exactly as needed. From the Assistive Technology Community for the Blind and Visually Impaired Facebook group, we have Pascal Access Solutions, LLC. That's spelled P-A-S-C-H-A-L-L. The world's number one tech-related newsletter for the blind is back. Spring has sprung, and so has the Pascal Power newsletter, bursting with incredible tech news. What's cooking in this edition? WWDC 25 sneak peek. Get ready for Apple's big event. We're diving deep into the AI advancements coming to Siri and VoiceOver. Think smarter, more accessible tech. Email masking magic. Tired of digital jackals sniffing around your inbox? Learn how to create email masks and keep your precious info safe. It's like a throwaway burner phone, but for your precious email. Chef Adam. Rosie, is that your cousin from the Jetsons cartoon? Meet the humanoid robot that can cook breakfast. Yes, you read that right. This could be a game changer for independent living for the blind and low vision community. Feel the data. MIT's accessible graphs are here. Explore and understand data through touch and sound. It's like a symphony for your fingertips. Pascal Power Star for the spring edition. George Foreman, from overcoming a speech impediment to becoming a boxing legend, faith leader, and grill master, George Foreman's story is the ultimate inspiration. Pascal Power Newsletter is committed to bringing you the most accessible and empowering tech news. We're not just a newsletter, we're your tech ally. Send us an email at pass1@accessiblepass.net. and we will magically appear every month in your email. Need help signing up? We will do that too. No worries. Read the full Spring Edition, Volume 17, April 2025, at the hot link. And that will be that for that one. Also posted in the assistive technology community from Sam Pinn, P-I-N-N. Hi, I'm going to ask the question I asked before again, but in a different way to stop any bias. If you have any questions about what I'm saying, please ask before you make a decision. I'm developing a device to assist totally blind users navigating large open plan offices. It uses haptic vibration that connects to the nearest beacon placed on key landmarks to help users reorientate. As the user approaches a beacon, the vibration intensifies to guide them to a landmark. This device is intended for people entering a large open plan office for the first time, those who are newly blind, or individuals working in a hybrid pattern who may feel disoriented when returning to the office. I'm exploring two approaches. Number one, an attachment that can be secured to a cane pole and extends over a straight handle of a white cane, allowing the user to feel vibrations through a pad with their finger. Number two, a cane with integrated vibration technology with buttons and features that allow you to use it without the vibrations if you want. It also has a screw-in pole that folds. I'd appreciate your thoughts on both options, including any benefits or drawbacks you might see. If you have a preference or other suggestions that could improve the device, I would love to hear them. Thank you for your input. You can respond in the comments on that post on the Assistive Technology Community for the Blind and Visually Impaired Facebook group. The National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, NOPBC, Facebook group has a post from Kevin Perrine, P-E-R-I-N-E, via Laurel Wheeler, W-H-E-E-L-E-R, Virtual Lions Club for the Blind and Visually Impaired Interest Meeting. Hey everyone, just over a week until our second interest meeting for our new Lions Club chapter. This chapter will be a virtual chapter designed so that those in the blind and visually impaired community who may not have easy access to transportation or who may experience other accessibility barriers that have thus far prevented them from becoming a Lion will have the opportunity to do so in a disability-friendly, fully accessible environment. I've had a few people reach out to me and ask if others with disabilities who experience some of the same barriers, like lack of transportation, could come and join, and the answer is absolutely. So if you are blind or visually impaired, or if you have a disability that has resulted in you having a difficult time accessing Lions Clubs, and want the opportunity to come and learn more about what it means to be a Lion, this is for you. For those who have expressed interest in this event so far, or who have not yet made a decision but see this post in the event, if you know others who are blind, visually impaired, or have a disability who would be interested in this event, hit the share button. Do me a favor and help push this event out to the community. The more we can reach, the better. I want everyone to have the opportunity to become a member of the greatest and largest community service organization on earth, and to experience the great fun we have giving back to and serving our community and the world as a Lion. This Lions Club chapter will be open to anyone in the United States to join, and will meet virtually so that all can attend and take part. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Call 919-832-5138.